welcome to the sixth episode in the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, who is joining me today.
Hello, I'm Luke. I'm one of the guitar buyers.
Hi, I'm Joss, and I run the YouTube.
Yeah, that was a good intro. Tight, gentlemen. I think that's the first time you guys have got
spelt
it down.
Spelt T-I-T-E.
Sort of well, so yeah.
Total fluke.
Well, it was good. Well
done. I don't even know what I said.
Luke Taft.
Well, it was very good. It sounded professional and in control. So how are you both doing? Luke Taft, how are you doing?
Great. Great. Looking forward to Glastonbury.
Wow, are you going?
Yes. Whey. Good tandem.
Yeah, touch the floor, spin around, Bagsies, you can't talk.
Don't look like that.
This podcast is going to be difficult if I can't talk. Sweet, so you're going to Glastonbury. Yeah. Why? What for? Florence like and the Machine and that?
Yeah, I didn't really want to go, and then the fuse dropped out, and I went, great!
It's because you have to listen to it every day in that room.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really a fuse fan. Catch some bands, chill out with some mates.
Sweet. Cool. Is there anything special that you're looking forward to?
Everything.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. Everywhere. Their new album dropped today, the day that we're recording this podcast.
Started listening to it.
Sweet.
Dean, our drum buyer, apparently didn't like it, told me to turn it off.
Oh, right, I see. Well, cool. That's a shame. What about playing-wise? Have you been playing anything interesting this week or checking anything out?
I haven't had a chance. Oh. We recorded the last podcast so late in the week.
That's true. I guess we did, so we're probably only half a week away from our last one, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so, I mean, other than playing my own guitars, which we have detailed already.
Yes, that is true. What about you, Joss Allen? How's your week been?
Fantastic. Super califragilistic expialidocious.
Have you been playing anything new?
Oh, tons. PRS stuff. Once again, I've done a video on the new 30th anniversary Wood Library.
Preempting
the next 10 years, yeah.
Yeah,
30th anniversary models. Today, video was completed.
Wicked. Yeah, because we're running a 30th anniversary PRS competition, which will still be on when this podcast
the
comes
SE
out.
Model. The video for that is up already. Yeah,
which is pretty good. If listeners, if you haven't checked that out, then do so. Go on to our Facebook and or our Twitter. Enter on both. It's better to enter on both. It's very easy to enter, and you can be in with a chance to win a really cool guitar that Joss plays in one of the videos. Check out the video as well, because it's pretty good. Joss did like a whole 7 minutes on it, so he checks out, you know, sort of
all the different pickup possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're pretty frightening. What is the name of the finish of that guitar that we're giving away?
Amethyst.
Yeah. Basically, some weird sort of velvet looking purple.
Yeah. I do
that's
say that.
That's quilted maple.
Yeah, I know. I know that. Yeah,
I do say it. I go, this is amethyst purple every time.
Well, at least it actually is purple instead of reindeer blue.
Yeah.
Which was purple. Yeah. The ESP color, reindeer blue. I was a big fan of that. What we tell her, it kind of reminds me of like a sort of a 70s pimp.
Yes, the inside of a 70s pimp's van.
Yeah.
That's purple.
Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of the sister from Breaking Bad.
I don't know what that means.
Breaking Bad?
Yes.
The series?
I just don't know who the sister is.
Does it have Skylar's guitars in sister? It? No, but right. Skylar's sister has everything coloured purple.
Oh, I see.
Sort of everything in her and Hank's house.
It's really purple. Nice of PRS to give us a guitar to give away that's actually interesting sort of thing. Like you know, it could have just been a run-of-the-mill.
Like a black one?
Yeah, exactly. It's really nice that this is a really unusual-looking, really cool PRS.
Yeah, it's nice that it's sort of fitting in with the 30th theme. And it wasn't just like we've got one of these sitting in the warehouse.
Yeah, exactly. That's so often the case with giveaways is that it's sort of stuff that's not moving. But this is actually just a really cool looking PRS. So
yeah.
Definitely get on that, because I think by the time this podcast goes up, you've probably got sort of about half a week to go until it's finished. So definitely get on to that. Okay, well, anything else you've been playing this week? Or has it just been like a PRS heavy time?
I mean, it's been PRS. It's been pretty PRS heavy anyway, just because of all the new stuff that we bought in. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I did do some videos for some ESP2 stuff.
Because ESP have gone.
I buggered the video, so I have to redo it.
What did you do?
Well, I thought it was I didn't use the autofocus on my camera, and then I just tried to manually focus it, and then I sat down and it looked in focus, but I didn't recheck it, so I continued filming. Went back to edit it, and it looked like a mess. So I decided against putting it up.
Upload it in, like, really low resolution. resolution.
Yeah, yeah.
Upload
yeah,
that in like 240.
Yeah, yeah, 240 is the way. And that's the future. People love VHS quality. I should point out that Joss actually single-handedly runs our YouTube channel, so he shoots everything as well as being in everything. So it's quite a complicated task to get cameras to focus on him when he's not there to check the shot, and he does a sterling effort.
But he doesn't have to check the shot through YouTube, does he?
Sorry?
He can check it through the camera. Yeah.
No, I can check. I've got the screen facing me, so I can square it up and make sure everything's good. I left the autofocus on, so the camera was going, you know, it was focusing on the chair or the guitars in the background instead of me.
I know.
But yeah, you did, because it's an anniversary for ESP as well.
As well, 40th anniversary.
10 years older than Purse.
Yes,
but
Espen Purse.
But you got to check out some cool things for that. What three-letter
guitar company started in 95? Because, I mean, we're starting to...
We need to find one.
Yeah. Something must have started.
Yeah, there would definitely be one.
I don't know. They're sure them chosen. We
should know this.
We should.
Really?
It's true.
But EBS maybe started in 95.
No, they were definitely a big 80s brand.
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, look at the pedals now. They still look 80s.
What sort of thing have ESP put out for their 40th anniversary?
Oh, man, they've got... The ones that I played were the LTD guitars. All the same specifications. An Eclipse, a Horizon, well, an MH model, and a 7-string guitar.
Yeah.
They all have the same specifications, and they all look killer. Matte finish guitars with a quilt maple top in this grey-black burst. EMG, Metalworks pickups, locking tuners, and these come with a hard case as well. So they're really tasty in that sort of aspect.
It's strange for those to release them as an LTD model, I guess.
They've got the 40th Japanese stuff as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah. So they've done it on both platforms.
Still, an odd choice for it to come out as an LTD rather than it coming out as, you know.
Have they done any E2 stuff?
They haven't done any E2
40th stuff.
It was LTD and full Japanese custom shop.
And those things are like... super like pricey, aren't
4,000
they?
£4,000 plus.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea that they've done them as LTD models, just because I think it's important for ESP to maintain the fact that LTD are still really high quality guitars. And with the introduction of E2 and with sort of the really high end proper ESP stuff, you know, you could almost mistake LTD with being the sort of the Squire to their Fender.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You can get it.
It's because the LTD range, you can buy the £230 ones all the way up to over £1,000 LTD bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was something they were quite keen to sort of focus on when they moved away from the original Grassroots series. Because originally you had ESP, and I think it was still branded ESP, but called Grassroots.
Mm. Right.
And that was like the Squire underbrand.
It's only in Japan now, isn't it, that stuff?
So I don't know, to be honest. Yeah. I just remember that...
Grassroots and Edwards.
Still in Japan. But yeah, they sort of made some stuff under that and then changed over to LTD and kind of sort of worked quite hard to make sure it was a separate separate branding and of itself.
Yeah, which it very much is, but it's so comprehensive in comparison to E2 or ESP now because, as Josh says, you can pick up a starter LTD and you can pick up a high-end LTD, and there are even signature models available in the LTD range, so they're kind of dealing with everything. It was, in fact, neat segue, those 40th anniversary ESPs that got me thinking about the topic for this week's podcast, which was essentially that because ESP had chosen to release some LTD 40th anniversary models, and as Joss has pointed out, they were such a high spec for something coming from LTD that I started thinking about what other guitars there are on the market that represent high quality for much less money than you'd expect.
Okay.
So I have dubbed this podcast Twang for Your Buck.
No.
And I have asked Luke and Joss to come up with their three like best value for money guitars on the market, and then I thought I've come up with some as well, and I thought the three of us can just talk about some guitars that this doesn't necessarily mean. I don't mean cheap guitars that we think are quite good. I mean guitars that have features that you would happily spend an extra £200 on if the price tag had been £200 more, sort of thing.
Okay.
So
So, like, the guitar, you'd be happy to pay the sort of money because of the specifications on the guitar?
Well, that sort of thing. So, like, a guitar where if it was £900, we would be saying, yeah, this guitar has these features, and because of these features, it's worth £900. But actually, the company that have made it have put it out at £500.
Okay, I get you.
But that sort of thing. Like, guitars that really are excellent buys. Yeah. Not just, like, the Fender American Standards... Strats and Tellys, for example, are great guitars, you know, custom shop pickups, really, really well built and put together. But it's what I expect for the price tag that you pay. That's what I expect for £1,000.
So surprising specifications for the price of money that you're going to pay.
Exactly. Okay. So I guess we'll sort of go around the room and maybe do one each, and we'll talk a bit about each one, and we'll just see sort of how far we get through the top three and see if we end up sort of stuck on talking about one or arguing about one. Luke Taft, what do you think? Throw us one.
Well, in terms of interesting spec that you'd sort of not guess, I think the Parallax series probably deserve a mention.
The washband stuff.
Yeah, one, they're really well put together guitars. Remember when we were messing about with them in the shop?
Yeah.
And the 8-string was sort of the kind of the cheapest 8-string you can play that actually still holds together in the low end.
Really? Yeah. So what does the Parallax consist of as a range? Because when it came out, I thought it was just the Solars. I thought it was just the Ola England.
Well, they've sort of come out of the Solar thing, where Ola has designed some double cuts, and then they've done some single cuts and some arch tops and things and some sort of flat top bolt-ons off the back of those. And they've all got either Duncan pickups or EMGs. Some of the Les Pauls have got like a full Babbage, like full contact bridge, which you're looking at me.
Babbage bridges are kind of common in the bass world.
Yeah. Like, they've got those on Les Pauls at like sort of £700 or £800.
Right.
And the versions with the Floyds, I think the cheapest one for a Floyd kicks in at £750.
Right.
And it's got a full original Floyd, not one of the 1000 series or one of the cheap Chinese or Korean made ones. So it's a proper Floyd that in itself is probably worth £200-250.
Right.
Plus, they've modified it with a brass block, so you get a bit more sustain and they're a bit more ringy. And they've got spring silencers, so there's no rattling from the trem.
Right.
And they've all got buzz fight and tuning, so they...
What's that?
It's like the modified scale length.
Yeah.
They sort of shorten the string a little bit,
right,
so the nut is slightly further forwards of where it should be. And then you tune the string slightly sharper so that, or slightly more tense to what it should be as a normal pitch.
Right.
And then it sort of compensates for some of the sour notes on like D chords. And
I see.
So it sort of just tempers the tuning a little better. It's kind of it was the temper tuning system that came in for guitars before they started doing all sort of the crazy, like kinked frets and all the other sort of compensations and things.
I see.
So it just plays a little bit better. But it was designed by a guy called Buzz Phaeton.
Right, solid name.
Yeah, they've got all that. And the most important thing is they've got the Stevens extended cutaways from the Nuno series guitars.
What is that?
Look at the back of them. It's pretty impressive.
So yeah, it's like, you know, like a bolt-on goes in, like the traditional Fender bolt-on goes in, you've got four screws on a plate.
Uh-huh.
Imagine instead of four screws, you had five and they were in a big curve.
I see.
And the neck extended up into the upper cutaway.
Oh, okay.
So the neck goes into like a paddle that extends into the body.
Okay.
So that then you can shave away the whole body from that cutaway.
So it's just improved contact, essentially.
Yeah. No, not improved contact, improved access.
Right. Oh, okay.
So you can play right the way up to the 22nd or 24th fret.
Right.
On a normal neck without a heel getting in the way at all.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So it's better access than a Les Paul. It's better access, I'd say, than a Les Paul access.
And is that's on the Ola as well, is it? That sort of thing. Oh, here we are. Joss is showing me a picture of it. I have seen that because, of course, that's on all the N4s,
all the
Nunos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not on the Solar, but it is. There is a like that. It's not because it's a neck through.
Yeah, so it's a hench cutout.
It's got that shaped cutout at the back of the guitar.
I mean, Washburn designed those back in the early... Well, I think another company designed it and then sort of licensed it to Washburn, or they bought it.
That's definitely a place that you have up in your room.
That's Josh has just found an amazing poster.
If anyone's familiar with the mid-90s poster with Nuno standing in his pants,
yep,
with his six-pack out,
yep.
I didn't have that poster on my wall as a child, but I did have the one where he was wearing slightly more clothing, holding his dog, Max.
Amazing.
Ridiculous.
And where he's holding like a double neck, like it's like an N6/12 or something.
For goodness sake, Luke.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's it's something that I think I've thought of Washburn certainly recently. Well, to be honest, since the Ola England signature model came out, and that really, I think, propelled Washburn back into the headlines again.
Yeah.
And it makes you kind of realise how much attention to detail goes on with that company.
Or does now, anyway.
Well, certainly, I mean, yes, yeah, absolutely, does now with this series, with the Parallax.
Seemingly sort of paying attention and doing good stuff.
Exactly.
It's like some of the new Rand lamps as well.
Well, yeah, yeah, of course, again, sort of.
The RD stuff.
RDs like the EOD 88.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've and what, other things other than the Satan that are really good?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've done a few good things. Yeah. They're all sort of the same parent company.
And yeah.
At some point, someone at the top's kind of woken up and gone, right, we've got these brands, what do we do with them?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've just employed some really interesting people to design stuff.
That's cool. And that's kind of exactly what I wanted this podcast to be about, was those things. And I think Washburn probably, I mean, we're obviously going to talk about a load more guitars, but even though you spoke about a range there, I think you've probably hit the nail on the head for the ultimate brand that have done that, Washburn.
Yeah, yeah.
A brand that were sort of paling into the background of other guitar companies in sort of the 21st century, all of a sudden realising that their name was only worth so much anymore.
Yeah.
And so instead of running, you know, on the laurels of that name, they've released new stuff that is just surpassing everyone else for sort of price versus quality.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's sort of what Ibanez did in the 80s when they came out with like the Edge Trem and the RG550s and all that stuff, and kind of, I guess, Washburn have sort of followed that model.
Yeah.
And gone, right, let's make every part of this guitar needs to be better than every other
Fender or Gibson. We can't get away with putting robot tuners on something.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Like Ibanez did it with Gotto tuners and Edge Trem and sort of Super 58 pickups and sort of naming everything and kind of really designing everything to be like, that is an item in and of itself.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's a really good way to go.
Yeah, cool. Joss, what about you? Let's throw sort of your first guitar that you think...
My first one, I made a list on my phone, Borgen. My first one is the Keith Merrow KM6.
Is that nice. Schecter?
Yeah.
Right, so we've actually on a very similar note then anyway, because of course Keith Merrow and Ola England are...
Good friends. Yeah.
Internet buddies.
Definitely.
What made you put the Merrow on there?
The Keith Merrow KM6. It's a guitar that he stated himself to be everything that he wanted in a custom guitar.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if quite a few of our picks today are our signature models in that case, because I guess a signature model is almost more likely to be something that's got a few of those customizations that just make it punch above
standard
models.
I mean, so the whole point with Keith is that he was doing those demos for God knows how long on all of these different custom build instruments that these companies would give him to demo, or that he would, you know, spec up and then purchase. And then Schecter came along, and obviously you're looking at a company that doesn't do any sort of custom build stuff. They have a custom shop, but there's nothing that, you know, is available to buy out of a shop just off the wall. So he picked every single aspect of a custom build guitar that he really, really likes. So we're talking, we've got this carved flame maple top. We've got an older body, or is it basswood body? So basswood body. And then we've got the neck, and then you've got the see-through paint finishes on the back so you can see all the wood. And then you've got the ebony fretboard, extra jumbo frets, locking tuners, Seymour Duncan black winters.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So we're looking at, you know, the full custom guitar specifications for a guitar that is under £1,000.
Yeah, if a completely boutique company were to put out a guitar and reel off the sort of specs that you just did and then say $3,000 at the end of it,
people
would be like,
that's
what a $3,000 custom shop guitar is.
The thing I really like about the Keith Merrows is it's the more subtle tweaks where they've put sort of the controls really far away.
Yeah.
Where you're not going to knock them.
I mean, it is literally just the volume.
Yeah, but and the switch is down there as well.
And the switch,
it?
Yeah. And it's nice because it has, oh yeah, and it's coil tappable as well, so you can get the single coil sounds as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's an amalgamation of everything that a custom guitar would be, but for like nowhere near the amount you would pay for a custom built guitar.
Yeah, it's a while since I played one. They're quite thin bodied. Is that right?
I don't think of them as being that thin.
Not that thin. They're not like the S series Schecters. They are quite hefty.
Oh, okay.
But let me, because I wanted to make sure, because I've completely forgotten the wood of the body, and I probably said all of the wrong words.
It's actually Padauk.
It's Padauk. It's Swampash. So I was going to say
I thought it was something really nice.
Grainy.
I just got up all the specs. So we've got a set neck, ultra access, Swampash body, flame maple top, got an arch top as well, which isn't cheap to get an arch top guitar, is it really? The neck is a three-piece maple with an ebony fretboard. You've got glow-in-the-dark dot markers on the side of the neck as well, which is awesome. 24 extra jumbo stainless steel frets.
Interesting.
Which is very cool. Fretboard radius is 12 to 16, so it's quite a hefty compound on there. Thin U. And yeah, so, and then we're at Graftech extra large black tusk nut.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as custom builds go, you can usually specify picking bits like that. And then
it's a hip shot bridge.
And it's a hip shot bridge, it's an actual hip shot bridge as well. Yeah, it's incredible. And yeah, the Seymour Duncan limited edition blackened Black Winters. I think that's just the finish.
Well, I don't know if it's still going, but for a while Schecter had an exclusive on the Black Winter six string pickups.
Oh, really?
They were the only builder that they sort of signed something with Duncan, so they were the only builder that could use them.
Oh, okay.
And originally, the Black Winters were supposed to be 7 and 8 string pickups.
Yeah.
and that was all they were released as.
But they bought out, the Sentient and the Nazgul, didn't they?
Yeah.
The Nazgul.
Maybe I'm getting slightly confused, but
I thought the Nazgul was just 8 string.
I think the Sentient, the Nazgul, and the... I don't know, the unicorn?
The Pegasus. Sorry, it's those that were 7 and 8 string that were exclusive to Schecter.
I see.
Six string pickups. Yeah.
Oh, bonkers.
Because now that they are just 6 and 7 7 and 8 string pickups for outside world guitars of Schecter.
Yeah, amazing.
So yeah, KM6, Keith Mirror. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'll throw, I guess, the third... most predicted company I would imagine to appear in this sort of list, which would be Ibanez, which I think we'd all expect to see in this list, just because, exactly as Luke pointed out, they're a company that are really known for using branded pickups, for using great tone woods at low prices. And I think, of course, we could have probably just made this an Ibanez podcast if we're going to talk about stuff that is a smaller price for
a bigger spec.
Yeah, exactly. Certainly, I mean, on the bass world, I'm not going to talk about basses, I will talk about guitars, but on the bass world, Ibanez were very much responsible for really dethroning Warwick. When we came out of sort of that dreadful period in the late 90s and early 2000s where everyone played Warwick basses, except anyone who was in any way in a band.
just all session players.
No, I remember seeing a lot of people gigging on Warwicks.
Incubus.
Like anyone in the UK metal scene.
Yeah, that's true. No, I'm not. Yeah, Warwick, I mean, Warwick were a big brand, but...
I mean, what's that brown 5-string you've got in your collection, Mr. Joe? God
damn it, yeah. I do own a 5-string Corvette, that's true.
Yeah.
I still need to lend that to your bass player, actually, Luke. I've lent it to...
You desperately want to get rid of it.
I've lent it to someone else at the moment. I really need to get it back off of them.
It's a wicked sounding bass.
Yeah, they are cool.
I think they play really well.
No, they are really good. But my point was that Ibanez came along and they could also do Babinga bodies and Jatoba.
And 5-piece Nexus.
Yeah, exactly. Nexus. And they could do it.
Nexus.
They could do it for less than $2,000. So Ibanez really, if anything, on the bass world, are the definition of doing a high spec for a low price. But the first guitar I'd like to choose is the very catchily named, the Ibanez RG927WZCZNTF. I mean, NTF is just a finish, but still, Ibanez, rubbish at names.
Yeah.
Really rubbish at names. But
rubbish at names of guitars, great at names of bits.
What do you mean?
Like their name, like you've got the Infinity pickups, you've got the Edge Pro, you've got...
the HD Wizard
No, HD yeah. Wizard. It just got sounds Cosmo yeah. Black Hardware.
They just get Steve Vai to name on those things. Yeah. That's all it sounds like. It's Steve Vai album titles.
Yeah, well, the Infinity pickups were sort of the cheap ones that they were putting in Korean, like Korean built stuff. I'm not doing well at the words.
Oh dear.
Steve Vai's new album, HP Wizard.
So
that's also how he installed his printer. I'm sorry.
Oh my god.
So I chose this guitar because it's a 7-string, and I think obviously it represents incredible value for money. I believe when this came out, it was limited edition, I definitely need the paper to read this.
Is it the one that?
It is the one that you shot a playthrough with. Yeah, that's right. Adam did a playthrough of it last week. Now great guitar. I think these were limited edition when they came out, but at the moment on a website it doesn't state anywhere.
Well, I've noticed there's a lot of spot production stuff where they do really short runs.
Yeah, and when me and Joss went up to Birmingham where the where Headstock, the Ibanez place is in the UK.
Distributor,
thank you. Yeah, I was short for words. They had one of these. I'm sure I was having a conversation about how it was a limited run, but regardless, it doesn't say anywhere. Anyway.
No. All those guitars that were limited runs were the non-premium versions.
Oh, that's why. Yeah. That's why. Well, this is still...
a tasty one.
Yeah, this is still an excellent choice. They hit the shelves at £795, including a hard case, which I just think anything, for me, that hits the shelf below a grand with a hard case, I've immediately.
See, I never factor cases into it.
Don't you? No. I always do.
Unless it's like a weird shape. Mm-hmm. If it's something like that, I mean, I've got Ibanez cases already.
Yeah.
You know, look at me. But, yeah, I never really think about it. It's just another case to put in the store.
Yeah. Like, it might be coming from a bass perspective. I think a lot less things come in cases from a bass perspective. So it's a big deal if you get a case.
For me, it just eats up a bit more room in the house.
Fair enough. I'm really excited about getting stuff in hard cases.
I mean, for £795, getting a hard case in the guitar world's pretty good.
Exactly.
I used to have a regular in one of my old places where he'd come in and he'd insist on taking guitars away with gig bags because he'd already filled up his shed with all the cases.
Oh,
and
was
they'd
it
all
Steve
gone.
Burrows?
they'd all got sort of damp and mouldy anyway, so
amazing.
No point.
fine. Okay, well, I mean, maybe the hard case isn't for everyone, but...
for anyone.
But I think this guitar has a ridiculously wicked spec. So, it is just kind of a standard RG with a basswood body, but it does have...
it's a USA basswood body, though.
That is true. It does have a really awesome Zeracote, I think I'm pronouncing it right, top, which looks amazing. The five-piece Venge and Babinga neck, and then you've got things like, you know, Demarzio. It's the Ibanez design, the IBZ7 pickups, which they made for them. But still, Demarzio pickups, an awesome like wood top, five-piece neck.
When the IBZ pickups came out, though, they were like top end. They were like above Demarzio.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, because Ibanez used to use them on all their US Masters. Because for a brief while, Ibanez made guitars out of the States.
Oh, I see.
Like the custom shop, and you could sort of spec stuff up and they'd build it.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, and that they you could just spec up different IBZs.
Because they still do the DNA custom shop, don't they?
Yeah, but it's just artist only
now.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
But things like the Edge 02 tremolo bridge, and just everything on it is just incredibly high level. Exactly the same as everything else we've mentioned. It's all been sort of outsourced pickups and parts, and then interesting woods used, and incredible build quality. And I think for £795, I'd be expecting to pick something up that's a standard model off the shelf.
Yeah.
I'd be expecting to pick something that was white, black, sunburst, or red.
That guitar is quite an exotic wood guitar overall, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Zilco top, swamp ash body, Wenge and Babinga.
Not swamp ash, American basswood.
American basswood body, Wenge and Babinga neck, rosewood fretboard. You've got quite an array of exotic woods there.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And again, I just think it's the sort of guitar that that if it had a price tag of like 1600 quid, I'd be like, yes, that is the sort of RG that you get for 1600 quid, because at the £800 mark you get an ordinary RG.
Yeah,
you get an RG with a scratch plate and you know, one of the five standard colours. So it's just you know, something that pushes above the boundaries for sort of that price tag. Luke Taft, coming back around to you.
Coming back around to me, and sort of, you know, obviously sticking with the figured and curly woods, I'm going to suggest the Variax.
Oh, yeah, sweet. So we're coming around to the first offering from the new...
From the new Yamaha Line 6 partnership. I might not have sort of quite read your phrasing on the... how this works fully. I think the Variax is just kind of an amazing guitar for sub 500 quid.
I agree. I'm actually going to put one in that also is slightly against sort of the format that I...
That's jolly good then.
Yeah, good.
But yeah, I just think they're incredible. They're really well put together. You've got the standard Yamaha build quality plus all the Line 6 technology, every guitar you could want in a box, all the tunings, everything.
I think for me, it's the first time I'm going to take the Variax concept seriously.
Yeah.
I know they've released higher spec guitars before, like when they were working with
James Tyler.
Yeah. But I don't know, for me, the James Tyler stuff didn't have a big enough name behind it to make me take Variax seriously as a concept. Whereas now, sort of partnered with Yamaha, I think.
And then
the price tag as well.
Yeah, the price tag and the fact Yamaha also built for Billy Sheehan.
Yeah, that actually does play a major part in this.
Yeah, that's important. But yeah, I just think they've done really well. It's just crazy that they're only 470 quid.
Yeah, exactly. They've not been out long either. I mean, just a couple of months.
Announced in January, but only in stock and sort of available in the UK for the last few weeks. So
I see. Awesome. Yeah, and what have they released them in? They're just a handful of standard finishes, aren't they?
Yeah, just the JTV, just the Variax standard. Black, sunburst, and white.
All right.
I think just three finishes, that's it.
Wicked, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. They are just something that doesn't follow quite the same format as the other things we've been talking about, because it's not something with a ridiculously high spec. But the simple fact that we can now get a Yamaha Line 6 for sub £500 is really, really good.
And I think to an extent, kind of, maybe we've become a bit blasé about it, but maybe it is a super high spec in that it has got so many guitar models in it.
Yeah, I guess so. If you want something for kind of home recording that's going to cover every single possibility, then that is it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd gig one, just because then I'd miss out on the opportunity of taking three or four guitars out. And I think that's a pleasure.
You'd still need three or four to change tunings.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. so they do funny tunings.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Luke only plays in funny tunings.
Exactly.
Hey, speaking of funny tunings, so I needed to put one of my jazz basses into D standard.
Right.
And I didn't have any 50 to 110s at home, and you can't put 45 to 105s into D standard. They're just too floppy. So without any around, I was looking around and I was like, oh, I've got a five string set here.
So you put like a 130 on the bottom or something?
I put a 125, 125, 105, 85, 65.
And
D. On a jazz bass, and tried to get it up to D. Yeah,
I bet that didn't love that.
I checked. I did it late last night, and I checked the action on the bass again this morning. And I was like, "Yeah, this neck is going to snap off if I don't take these off." So I'm going to take the strings off when I get home tonight.
Yeah, obviously, once you've got home and it's already snapped,
it's probably snapped. Oh God!
Your neighbours have phoned the police because they heard a loud bang and thought someone had just been killed.
Yeah. But literally, the rest of the strings were fine. The D, G, and C string were fine. But trying to get a 65. Which is obviously designed to be a D. Trying to get that up to F was... I've never been so afraid of a string snapping in my face before.
A bass string and taking a bass string, off. Yeah. So that caused damage.
Yeah.
leaning it away from you.
Yeah, exactly.
Holding it from the upper horn.
I mean, it was a real wrestle as well. I was really having to like wrestle the tuning peg round to get it up there.
Yeah, yeah. Sweating.
It's definitely don't try that at home. Just use 50 to 110s, people.
But you managed to get the bottom up.
Oh, yeah. It's there. It's all there. It's fine. It's working. It's just slowly snapping the neck off. Yeah, it's playable at the moment, but I reckon by the time I go home, it's going to be a good, you know, half an inch or so underneath the the board.
Good luck with that one.
Anyway, moving swiftly on, Joss Allen, throw us another bone.
Next one is... It's an Ibanez.
Dun, 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 so we're sticking... well, we're not sticking with the Ibanez. And what are you thinking?
An Ibanez RC720.
Part of the Road Course
Road
series.
Course.
Yes, yeah.
Is that their, like, Jaguar-style one? Sort of Jaguar-style body shape, isn't it? The sort of offset shape.
Kind of is offset.
Like an Talman or something?
Yeah, I would say that if I was more inclined to play a Les Paul but wanted to play an Ibanez, I'd go for something like that, maybe.
Right, okay.
It's got a bolt-on neck. I did have the specifications, but I just got rid of them accidentally.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But... It's the model, it's the only premium road core in the range. So it's one down from the prestige model that they released, because they released the premium and the road course, the premium and the prestige model at the same time, because they were using the more affordable models at first.
Right.
Obviously, you had the RC in red and black with just two humbuckers. Then they bought out the three single coil model. Then they bought out the black one with the... humbucker and the single in the neck, and then last year they bought out the RC720 and the prestige model.
So what makes this one sort of meet their specification for being something that's like in great value for money?
I'm gonna tell you now, here we are. The RC720 in charcoal brown flat. I'll tell you why, because you know the 721, the Ibanez RG721.
I do, yeah.
Yeah? They're like...
I don't.
You know the hard-tailed RG model with the flame maple top or the rosewood top?
If an RG ends in a 1, it's a hardtail.
Right.
If it ends at 2-1, it's got no scratch plate and two humbuckers and a hardtail.
That is ridiculous that
you're
know
so
that.
You're so silly. So silly.
You're not even the Ibanez purchaser.
No, but I have owned many Ibanez.
So, yeah, you know those guitars, the RG721? They are £700 and something, and they are. When I first played them, they were incredible. I was like, "Oh my god, these guitars are amazing!" And then they bought out these RC720s, which are in the same vein. So they've got a three-piece maple neck, a rosewood top. So it's the same sort of top as the RG721. It's got the rosewood top with a mahogany body, rosewood fretboard, medium jumbo frets with the premium fret edge treatment. Ibanez's core tone. Neck and bridge pickups, tight tune bridge, which is once again like a through body thing, and it's cool because the bridge is actually inside the body as well, so you can get super low action, so you can bring it up, it's like beveled into the body,
right?
Chrome hardware and a hard case included.
Hey,
for £530.
What?
Yeah.
Are we just trying to find the cheapest guitar with a hard case?
Yeah,
seems like that now. But I mean, look at the thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant. I think when we went up to the Ibanez distribution place, you did a little demo of one as well.
So
listeners, feel free to check out the YouTube.
I don't like those demos. Obviously, everybody, feel free to have a look.
But we had like 5 minutes.
We
of
had
guitar,
literally
didn't
like
we?
5 minutes to, per
I think
guitar.
We were tasked with trying to shoot something like 40 videos in 1 day. So Josh got very knackered and his hands got very tired.
Yeah,
and, that was a lot of guitars to shoot in 1 8-hour session.
That was the guitar when we were just chilling outside in the place where all the guitars were up in Birmingham, not the little room we were recording in, but the actual main area. That was the guitar that I was playing more than anything, and the Paul Gilbert. RG model as well, but that guitar was the guitar I was playing more than anything, and I was just so surprised at how well it played. Not surprised, but I was just like overwhelmed with how well it played, because it's just such an affordable guitar.
It's
like £530 hard case, premium quality guitar as well. Like all of their premium guitars are £700 to £900.
Yeah,
and that's £500.
It's quite an unusual model. I don't think of the Road Core as being part of the core of Ibanez sort of models. You know, it's not an RG and it's not an S. Yeah,
no, series. it was quite a different model to just kind of throw in there, I think. But when we did see them, when I first saw them, it was actually when I took my first trip up to Birmingham with Alex Naylor-Davis, the guy, one of the assistant managers from the store.
Yeah.
It was one of the first times I went up there, and I went up with him, and the guys at Ibanez were like, "We've actually got one of the road cores in. Would you like to see it?" And we were like, "I don't even know what that is." He opened the case, and we were just like, "That is incredibly cool."
Yeah.
And that was the first time I saw it, and I've been in love with them ever since. And then when they bring out a £530 premium made guitar,
yeah,
it's kind of just a no-brainer if you want that style of guitar, really.
Yeah,
the tight tune bridges are wicked.
Awesomely
they're
cool.
They're like the
yeah,
whole
yeah,
Babich.
Oh, really?
Or Babich, or however. Babich. Like sort of altogether, like no vibration, no wobbly bits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because like the bridge is locked into place.
Yeah, they're really cool. And they've got the old shore grip knobs.
Yep.
I bloody love those.
Very cool.
My Roadster's got those.
Ibanez are good at bridges and getting really good bridge companies on board. On the base.
Well, no, they're all Ibanez. They're just designed and made by Ibanez. I think they're made by maybe Gotto for Ibanez.
Oh, I see.
But they are all Ibanez designs.
That's awesome. On the on the BTB series and on some of the high-end SR series bases by Ibanez, they introduced their monorail bridges.
Yeah.
Have you seen those? Oh, what a brilliant idea. So individual bridge pieces for every string.
Yeah.
So essentially a four-string bass has four individual mini bridges on it, which just for bringing down like rattle or, you know, string vibration when you're playing another string is... It's such a little thing, but it's just such a sensible, brilliant idea to just deal with.
And for transferring each string into the body.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Kind of vibration-wise.
Yeah.
It's a different way. There isn't sort of a better or worse, but obviously it's a different way of getting wood tone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Especially when you've got those kind of really high output active pickups, it becomes more important to find good ways of getting the bass to sound like the ridiculously expensive woods that you've used to make it. Cool. Well,
I've just seen Joe's next one.
Yeah, so I'm going to stay on the Ibanez thing. I said this could almost be an Ibanez podcast, and it's been that way for a few guitars now. But I thought this one had to be included, even though it's kind of it's on the border of being sort of part of the actual spec criteria that we've given this. I'm choosing the Ibanez RG9, which is their 9-string.
Is this value for money because you get 3 extra strings?
That is exactly.
This is 150% of the guitar you could have had.
Yes, that is true. That is a fact. It is 150% more.
You should work for a supermarket.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, anyway,
3 for the price of 2.
I've chosen the 9-string because it's a 9-string guitar for £625, and it's just I remember when 8-strings came out, when we first started seeing stock model 8-strings, and they were just ridiculous money wise I remember when like the Tosin Abassi came out and it was $4,000 or whatever, and things like that. And for Ibanez to introduce a 9-string at £625, I think was
crazy.
It was really impressive. Like, you think about what's actually involved in producing a 9-string guitar. Like, everything on it has to be custom. Like, they have just made this guitar. They have had to remake all the presses and the pickups and the hardware are for this one guitar. And they've managed to price it at £625 instead of $2,000. Like, if they're released like a standard RG, if they released this RG9 and said it's $2,000, would have been like, well, it's $2,000, but hey, it's a 9-string. It's your chance to play a 9-string. That's why it's $2,000. I think it's incredibly good. I mean, spec-wise, it's more on the basic side. They're not outsourced pickups or anything like that. It's a basswood body. It's a simple black top. It is still a 5-piece neck, but everything like that is less snazzy than, I guess, the other guitars that we've been mentioning. But just the simple fact that it's a 9-string for £625.
Yeah,
because they do the big brother of that version as well, don't they? They do a prestige one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know, actually.
Yeah, they do a prestige one.
All right.
Sweet. Sorry to everyone that's listening, though. I keep sounding... I am 24 years old, just to let you know. I keep sounding like a 12-year-old boy at the moment.
Oh, what? Because your voice is breaking.
Yeah, there, yeah. I don't know why. I've been screaming into pillows a lot recently to try and get rid of it, but it's not happening.
This has taken an odd turn.
Yeah, that really was random. But I actually, in my list, I kind of put this, this nine string down... alongside kind of including the RG8 just okay. As a because I didn't feel that I could put them in as separate guitars, but the RG8 is £299 for an eight string.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That is crazy cheap. Now, you mentioned earlier that you thought what was the guitar that you thought was one of the best cheaper eight strings?
The Washburn.
Yeah. Like one of the PXS's, I think it was. I forget which one exactly.
Why was that? Is it to do with pickups? Is it the same thing that basses suffer from when you add extra strings?
No, I mean, it's a through neck guitar, isn't it? It's a through neck ebony board.
It's the same as when you add on like a low B to a bass, and it's got to be quite an expensive bass. Yeah, otherwise, it just sounds woolly and wobbly and horrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas it's the same on like an eight string. Like a lot of the cheaper ones sound a bit muddy. Whereas this thing, you just sort of plug it in and it was still there and it was still coherent and. You could sort of do some pretty heavy riffage on it.
Yeah,
I see. Some of the other cheapest sort of struggle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just wanted to give a cursory mention to the RG8 because whilst this RG8 would probably fit more on a podcast if we were talking about like the best cheap guitars out there, because it doesn't have a lot of those features that sort of pull it up like everything else we've spoken about. Nonetheless, it is an eight-string guitar for £300. And I think that is... whilst it's basic of spec, I think you can rely on a certain level of quality from Ibanez that this one will certainly have. Luke Taft, background.
Well, my last choice is an Epiphone Les Paul tribute outfit.
Ah, so we're seeing the 60s one.
Just
a standard outfit model.
I'm not too sure which ones are current and which ones.
Yeah.
But I just know they're all of a similar spec, other than sort of necks.
Yeah.
So yeah, whichever ones are still available. It's an Epiphone Les Paul, but a slightly refined sort of finish to it. They don't feel like a regular Les Paul, like the finish doesn't feel quite as thick.
Right.
They just feel like a nicer instrument. Plus they've got 57 classic pickups, the full American Gibsons. They come with strap locks. They've got coil taps and... crucially, they include a hard case.
Oh,
and they're under £500.
Yeah! That's what we want to hear.
Yeah! That looks like we've... Yeah.
Wow.
I checked before coming over. I think they're £470.
That's incredible, because I remember
they were
when 599. I was at the store, I was selling them for £600. Yeah.
They were £599 for a long while, and now at the minute they're cheaper.
Everyone buy one.
Yeah. They're just crazy good guitars. If anybody is like a Les Paul player that needs a backup... like, just go for one of those for gigging. Yeah.
I did wonder if we'd hear any
Les Pauls. It's got Grover tuners as well, isn't it?
Locking tuners.
Yeah.
I did wonder if we'd have any Epiphones in this list, because they do wicked guitars, but are just because Gibson makes such affordable Les Pauls now, they do kind of get brushed aside.
Well, in terms of my honourable mentions, I was going to say one of the sort of 2015 special double cutaways.
Uh-huh.
Just mostly because I really like Les Paul special double cutaways.
Yeah. I mean, how much are they? They're
like $799.
It's not a lot of money.
They're so cheap. I mean, I sort of dropped that out as soon as you said sort of stuff with a higher spec.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like Epiphone Les Paul tribute outfit.
Yeah,
there.
Absolutely. Just Epiphone great. Are really good at that, like putting out occasionally. I was a big fan of the ES175s that Epiphone did. The limited edition ones that had Gibson pickups. Yeah, like
finish.
A matte natural. Yeah, they were so nice.
And the Japanese casinos.
Oh, yeah, those things are...
Those things were killer
sound
guitars.
Amazing.
They were like, what, 11, 9,
yeah,
9, 10,
like
9,
that,
9?
Yeah.
And they could have been £2,000.
Really?
They were just the best semis. I mean, they were as good, if not better, than some sort of cheaper 335s and things.
Yeah, amazing. Joss, we've got just about enough time for you to come around and do your last one. So
can you fire it off here?
So do yours and do it quick, and then we'll take a couple of questions, but we are coming up on time at the moment.
Cool. I'm going to go for the PRS-S2 standard.
Hey, it's a PRS convention. Why the S2? Why do S2 get in and not SE?
because it's under £1,000. This model doesn't come with a hard case. It comes with a soft bag, but it's a deluxe
soft bag. Their
soft
bags are wicked.
I prefer their gig bags to
they're
hard cases.
Amazing.
Really, for all the reasons I've already mentioned.
Yeah, they're amazing.
They're actually a soft case that's fit for purpose, and 90% of soft cases are not. Mm. So, yeah, that's...
So American-made. I think that's kind of all it needs to be seen for that guitar. I mean, when you see... I mean, there's other companies that are American-made instruments at the moment where you get a lot of bad-mouthing for those, for their build quality, for their finishing and stuff like that. You just don't get that with PRS guitars. So the S2 range, I got to play one another one today because I was looking at doing a demo on it, video demo today, and it was just an S2 Custom 24... and I'd played the standards already. I went to the store on my day off and I dragged my girlfriend there and said, down, we're going to play this guitar for a little bit. And I played it for a horrendously long time. And it's just, I'm going to go with this model because the specifications are great. They're high specifications, but because it's the classic American-made build quality. We're talking like first, the epitomization of decent American-made product.
Yeah.
So it's strong. The finishing is is good.
Independent.
They love meat, and it's just this guitar epitomizes that power that American history has.
They're not very fuel efficient though.
The guitars aren't. No, just petrol guzzling maniacs.
Yeah.
But yeah, the guitar is. I'm going for that just because of the build quality alone. It just it's second to none. It stands on its own.
Yeah, and for the price tag as well.
And the price tag.
We're going to move on to some questions now, so I won't do my last one, but I will mention what it was so that you can go and check it out in your own time if you want to. And
so, do you want me to read it?
No, it's all right. I was just finding the piece of paper with it on. Yeah, that was good. I thought that was seamless. seamless work there by me. It's my fault for putting all my bits of paper around me on the floor, slightly out of hand's reach. but yeah, I was going to go for the Kramer Barretta Vintage, specifically in candy blue because it looks amazing. But just because I think Kramer are another company that often do really interesting specs on really low-priced things. So go and check out a Kramer Barretta Vintage because they are really whole wicked. But anyway, questions. All our questions this week, as every week, are coming from the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. This first question comes from Lewis, and he says, "Hi all. I'm looking for a piece of advice. I'm in a band and I'm building a pedal board. At the moment, I have an Electro Harmonix Metal Muff Distortion, Digitech Multi Effects Color Tone, I think, Fuzz Tone Changer, and Wah Volume Pedal. What pedals should I get next? I have about £60 to spend on the next one. Any advice? Much appreciated." So £60. So we're coming in at kind of the
Moor.
Yeah, we're coming in at the entry level. Now let's look at what he's got already. So he's got a Metal Muff Distortion, and he's got a Digitech Multi Effects, which is dealing with...
Yeah, and then another sort of fuzz and the wah. If he's already got a Multi Effects, I'd say have a play around with the Multi Effects and see what is in that you think kind of isn't quite getting to where you need it to be.
Is that not what he's saying? I thought he was saying that the fuzz tone changer and wah volume was what he was using on the Digitech Multi Effects. Maybe I misread that.
Oh, yeah, well... I'm
not sure. That's maybe not clear. But, yeah, okay. So yeah.
I have a plan. I mean, maybe, like, grab the Moor, the multi-modulation pedal.
Yeah, the Mod Factory. Really great pedal. I mean, that is the one thing that's kind of missing from here, I guess, is modulation. They're great.
They'd cover a lot of bases.
Yeah, and really well as well. I mean... If you could stretch up another £20, you could get a Line 6 M5, which will just cover sort of all bases really well. Admittedly, it's having another multi-effects, but it's a multi-effects that you're using as a single stomp for whatever you need. Now, I would say that, something to add to this pedal board would be delay.
I mean...
But for £60,
Labs... £39 at the minute for the double decker.
Mm.
Oh yeah,
go for one of those. That's good. I think we might still have some of the Digitech XDDs or the XDVs left at £29.
Wow, yeah, they're pretty good. I mean, other pedals of mention for around the £60 mark, I would say, would be the Electro Harmonic Soul Food. I know, he's mentioned he's got a distortion, but for a really cracking drive pedal for not a lot of money, what are they, £49?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
At least that would be totally different to the Metal Muff.
Joss, do you think we covered everything, or have you got a suggestion on that?
Struggling a bit. I don't really...
No, pedals aren't especially really your forte. Yeah.
Too busy buying guitars.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Lewis, I hope that helped. Moving on, Lee says, I'm looking at getting an Ibanez Gem 77 PBFP. Mm. Anyone out there have one or tried one? What's your opinion?
Is that the floral pattern one?
Yeah, the blues.
Awesome guitar.
Thoughts? Have you played one?
I have.
Have you done a demo? Have we shot a video demo on one?
No, we've done one of the little short videos again up in Birmingham.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I haven't. But I sold two while I was at the store. They're just incredibly cool guitars. Once again, premium range.
Yeah.
Hard cased. They come with the Evolutions in it as well. So
I thought the new blue ones didn't have the Evos.
Don't they?
No, I thought they put something else in them.
I guess I just went straight to Evos just because of him. But they are Damasios, aren't they?
Yeah. I think because they're sort of 1,100-1,200 quid. Mm.
Yeah.
So I think they've put something else in them. But yeah, wicked. And they look amazing.
I mean, they look amazing. But, you know, as you would think with an Ibanez guitar, they just play effortlessly as well.
Yeah.
I
had one of the original florals back from the 90s.
What is this new Gem 77? Is this an affordable version?
Yeah. When they did the original florals, they were sort of that run of the fabric from the curtains,
right,
which were all the pink and green vine ones. And then they did sort of a really short run with a maple board and like a blue floral pattern to it,
right,
which have become sort of quite collectible since. And this is kind of like a premium range level, almost kind of reissue.
I see.
Or sort of restyling of that.
It's cool because they're still using the material as well under the lacquer, aren't they?
Yeah. It's still material. I don't think it's the same material.
It's not the same material.
No. But still, that's different. Awesome. Okay. Let's take one more question. Again, we're going to be leaving questions over, and there was quite a good one, but we're going to go for this one because it's shorter. Ross says, hi all, I'm looking at possibly purchasing a Laney L5T112 combo for my clean tones at home. Anyone had any positive experiences? All comments most welcome. Cheers.
Is that the Lionheart stuff?
Yeah, that's right.
5-watt one.
Yeah.
I think if you're just using it for clean tones, you're sort of selling it a bit short.
Really?
I think the drives in them sound wicked.
They sound awesome. I mean, you know, Tom Quayle.
Yeah.
And Martin Miller, two new Ibanez Laney players. Well, Tom Quayle's now endorsed by Laney. Tom Quayle is now endorsed by Laney, and so is this guy Martin Miller. He plays Ibanez and Laney amplification. And, you know, the whole jazz fusion thing, kind of, apart from clean stuff, rests on that fluid, beautiful overdrive time.
That's what they do.
Yeah, and those Lionhearts do them incredibly well. Yeah.
So it's a 5-watt combo, so like the Marshall Class 5.
Yeah, like a little Class 5.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a home-use...
But
drive,
more on it, you've got like
it's
a
got
switchable
dual
drive.
Channel. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Dual channel on a 5-watt amp.
Mm. Yeah, it's a properly fully featured amp, which is why I'm saying it. I think you're sort of selling it short because, right, I mean, the clean's good, but the drive is for me the tone in those amps.
And it's not a lot of drive either, is it? It's like a really nice, clear, low gain amp.
Yeah, and it bang it into like a high output bridge pickup, and you've got like a proper old school sort of gnarly rock thing going on.
And they're cool because the Lionheart series of amps is the ones that are still built in Birmingham.
Right. Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Those are the ones that when you go in there, they've got all of their Lionheart stuff on soak testing and just chilling there, and they're all in there making them and stuff. It's really cool to see.
That was actually one of the best bits of when we went up to Birmingham.
I think so.
I think we always talk about Ibanez when we go up there, but of course Ibanez and Laney are kind of one up there, but Laney are still making all the stuff up there, so... there's a lot more going on the amp side of things than the guitar side of things, because they're not just having things delivered, they are actually building stuff.
Yeah,
they had some really cool... They had like the new... Because they've recently introduced a Lionheart bass amp as
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's got the...
Valve?
No.
Okay.
And it's not called Lionheart, but it does have the Lionheart symbol on it, and it is like blue, like the like a darker blue. But it's a two-use sort of rack mounted. They've gone more for the Well, they've gone for the sort of people that you expect to play Laney bass amps, to be honest, which I think almost the Lionheart was the opposite. Lionheart was Laney trying to appeal to people who weren't necessarily in metal bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for some reason on the bass amp, the Nexus is what they
call
it.
Oh, yeah, the bass Nexus, series. Yeah.
But it's a new series that's been very much Britishified.
You got to have a mess around with it, didn't you?
I did. It was really great. I really loved it, but it wasn't aimed at me.
No.
As a bass player, it was completely solid state, which is fine. I mean, you can get some great sort of retro tones off of that, and it had some cool effects built in. But the effects that they had were like a tone shape, which just allows you to scoop out mids, really, which is not something I ever want to do. And the effects you had were like reverb and chorus sort of built in. It comes with a foot pedal, which is great. I mean, that's an amp that does everything, as well as having a really good tuner on board. Like, you can buy that and be done and not need anything else. It's a great session piece of gear, but I just didn't need... I don't need either
chorus
of these.
And reverb.
I just want to drive on there. If you can put a bass amp that's dual channel, which are so few and far between, like Orange and Fender are about the only companies that do bass amps where you can switch in a drive on there. That's
the new Ampeg BAs.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they've got the bass scrambler in them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which they've now released as a separate pedal.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Do you know how much for?
An amount of pounds.
Wow, an amount of pounds. Oh, I might buy that. I'm going to look that up after
I'm
this.
I'm sorry. I want to say 279 for the pedal, but
really?
that seems too high.
Mm, yeah, that's quite a lot. I'm probably less interested at 279. But if it was around 100, 150 quid, I'd be there. Anyway, before you look that up, we are way over time, and we're doing this at the end of the day, so everyone is actually going to lock this place up if we don't finish up and go. So thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in this week. We will be back next week with more podcast goodness. Thank you for tuning in. See you later. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.